Welcome to Dodgers Daily. Casey Porter here. Going to be by myself tonight. Austin Brubaker is in. Well, he's at, I don't know where he's at right now, actually. He's at the Great Lakes Loons game. So he's watching really, really, really nice minor league baseball tonight. So he will not be joining in the Dodgers Daily show tonight. So, hey, looking forward to talking to you. Great Dodgers fans out there, as I say each and every week, have the best crowd going. No doubt about that. So, hey, since we've talked to you this morning, the Dodgers have played a game. Disappointing kind of dud, if you will, of a game for the Dodgers today. They had Minnesota, obviously, and it was a game to where the Dodgers did score first, and usually when the Dodgers score first, they win. They do a pretty good job of doing that. But, hey, it was a day to where Bobby Miller, he battled. Not going to lie about it. Hey, need a big crowd tonight. Tell everybody out there that I'm going to be by myself. I want this to be led by the crowd. Not going to lie about it. Today was a day to where really Bobby Miller did not have his best stuff. The thing about him, we'll get into it a little bit more. If you have any questions about what you'd like to, you know, any discuss about today's outing by Bobby Miller or anything like that, just let me know. Put it in the chat and we will get after it. Have a good crowd logging in. Good evening, Justin Lamas. Who should we bring up to replace Chris Taylor? Well, the guy I think you should bring up that could play both infield and outfield, the obvious guy there would be Miguel Vargas. He's a guy that could play left field. He's a guy that could play third base. Not shortstop like Chris Taylor can, but I don't think you need a guy to play shortstop. You got both Mookie and Miguel Rojas to do that. So I think the guy, if you wanted to bring up somebody right now, already on the 40-man roster, that guy I think definitely would be Miguel Vargas. Good evening, Daniel Berry Sports Highlight. Yo, back to yourself, Roy Estrada, Craig Osterberg. Good evening to everybody. Hey, tell everybody about Dodgers Daily Live. We're going to talk about the Dodgers game, a lot of the minor league action that's going on as well. If you have any prospects that you'd like to talk about and see videos of, what did you think about today's game? Of course, any time that you go on the road, of which when you lose the last game of a series, it kind of scars it and mars it, because when you go on the road and you win a series, as good as the Dodgers are, as high as the expectations are, still, if you go on the road and win a series, that's a good thing, right? I mean, the Dodgers have only lost one series all year. That was on the road at the Cubs, a cold environment, totally understandable. So I think everybody would have to admit that the trip to Minnesota was a success. I mean, obviously, you're looking for a sweep, especially when you're first two, and it's always disappointing to lose that last one. But I think you need to keep that into perspective, that the Dodgers still did win the series. Hey, Craig says Vesia, too many home runs given up. And yes, Alex Vesia does have minor league options. We've talked about that several different times. I think that's probably one of the reasons why the Dodgers kept him. And J.P. Fireisen. We've already seen J.P. Fireisen down with Oklahoma City. I have featured him a couple of different times on the Down the Farm, and not even just Down the Farm, just talking about him overall. So Alex Vesia, J.P. Fireisen. We saw Gus Varland. He got brought up for one outing, gave up a couple of runs, got sent back down. So it's kind of interesting. The Dodgers, and they do this every year. Alex Friedman actually tweeted this out the other day. On pace for, I think he said, 360 transactions this year. Try that on for size. 360 transactions. It's just kind of crazy that you go out and you buy the most expensive team that baseball can buy, but yet it just seems like you're having to take the car to the mechanic. And not only that, kind of a lot of times, you know, you're dealing with getting DFA guys, you're dealing with waivers and that kind of thing. Not only taking it to the mechanics, really kind of taking it to a shade tree mechanic. It's just an interesting dynamic, the way that the Dodgers operate that situation. It just seems like to me, and I don't mean this as a criticism, this is just kind of the way I see things and just kind of the way my viewpoint on it. It just seems like to me that if you commit over $1 billion, you can figure out a roster that's not always in influx. It just, you would think that for over $1 billion, not $1 billion, you could figure out how to get a roster full of guys together where you could define roles, get them settled into their roles and have them play their roles and then figure out whose roles are what and then adjust around that. It just seems like it's a constantly changing influx of new guys, guys off the waiver wire, guys on the up down. And like I said, for $1 billion, it just seems odd that you have to do that with that kind of payroll. But again, hey, who am I to say any? I don't mean that as a criticism because, again, the Dodgers have been massively successful in the regular season. Last year was just an incredible, I think we could say an incredible surprise to everybody. So not meant to be a criticism. I just find that interesting that there's just so much chaos, and it is chaos. When you're dealing with 360 transactions and guys are moving back and forth and there's waiver wires that, and hey, by the way, this is really cool. You're going to want to tune into this. We have a good crowd logging in. Again, going to be by myself. So make sure and let everybody know to come on over to Dodgers Daily. Going to be here for a while talking Dodgers baseball. Really cool. Okay. That reminded me, got a chance today to talk to Jack Murphy. Now, Jack Murphy was on the 2016 team in Oklahoma City when the Dodgers acquired Chris Taylor. He was on the 2017 team when the Dodgers acquired Max Muncy. He got to play with both of those guys. And I remember Jack Murphy very, very well. So whenever I reached out to him, he is now a scout. He's a pro scout. So there's amateur scouts who evaluate the amateurs, right? And then there's pro scouts like Jack Murphy who evaluate all of the other professionals on all the other teams. So if you want to know why the Dodgers are so good in trades, if you want to know why the Dodgers are so good at picking up guys on the waiver wire, if they're so good at finding guys like Denelson Lamet and Nabil Chrismat, and they come into this organization and have success, it's because of the professional scouts like Jack Murphy. So I was getting ready to explain this. So the Dodgers have amateur scouts like a Tom Kunis that I talked to a couple of months ago. So when I say amateur scout, I don't mean he's not a professional. What I mean is an amateur scout is a scout that goes and finds the talent at the amateur ranks, whether that be college or high school, and then finds guys to actually get drafted into the system. The pro scouts, like Jack Murphy, they don't go look at amateurs. Their one and only job, they'll be assigned like one, two, and even sometimes up to three other teams. Their job is to go watch all of the other teams' talent in the minor leagues and see if there's a guy that's getting ready to get DFA'd that the Dodgers might want. So if you wonder, huh, how are the Dodgers so good at finding all these diamonds in the rough? How are they so good at finding all these guys off of the waiver wires that can really, really help the team? It's because they have an entire professional scout department that is all their job is to go watch the other team's prospects in the minor leagues and evaluate. So then what happens is when a guy like Denelson Lamet gets put on the waiver wire, then the Dodgers will have a meeting. All of their professional scouts will get together. The analytics team will get together, and they'll have a big, long discussion about that player that is on the waiver wire, and everybody will give their opinion. Everybody will give their 2 cents, and then at the end of the discussion, they will make a determination whether or not they think that player is worth going after. It is an incredible system. Jack Murphy does just a wonderful job at finding all of these other professional players that maybe are at the AAA level that have major league experience. You know, a guy like Matt Gage was released, but like a Denelson Lamet, or not a Denelson Lamet, but a Nabil Chrismat, a guy who right now is at the AAA level, got DFA'd. He was on the waiver wire, so all the other professional scouts from the other organizations evaluated him and passed on him, and now he's back with the Dodgers. That's a really cool system, and Jack explained all of it. It was a wonderful interview. He talked about Chris Taylor and playing with Chris Taylor that first 3 or 4 months when he became a Dodger at Oklahoma City. He talked about Max Muncy. I think you're going to be interested in his comments on Max Muncy and the type of hitter he is and the type of hitter he could be if he had a different type of approach. Not good or bad. Like obviously the club asked him to be a certain hitter and he's done a really good job at that. But I think you'll be interested to hear his comments on Max Muncy. And then also the other guy I wanted to ask him about was Charlie Culberson. If you remember old Charlie in what year was that? 2016, whatever. The years run together as they go on. Vin Scully's last year behind the mic, and Charlie Culberson hit the walk-off home run in Vin Scully's last game behind the mic to win the NL West. And Charlie Culberson, Jack Murphy played a lot together in AAA Oklahoma City. They're very good friends even to this day. And Jack Murphy talks a lot about Charlie Culberson. And then he goes into the scouting department. He also talks about, hey, what separates the Dodgers in terms of their scouting? Why are the Dodgers so much better than everybody else in the scouting department? And just the expectations of being a Dodger. And then, of course, I asked him about signing Shohei Ohtani, Tyler Glasnow, and all those guys, and how exciting that is for everybody in the system. So, yeah, 2016, I had that year right. I always doubt myself because it's like, man, surely that wasn't 8 years ago. I mean, you got to be kidding me that home run was 8 years ago from Charlie Culberson. That seems like just yesterday. So, hey, we've got a good crowd logging in. Let's get people over to Dodgers Daily. Get out your phone. Get out Twitter. Get out whatever you have to. Let everybody know that I'm by myself and we are going live. So let's get back to the Dodgers baseball game today. So Bobby Miller, we'll get into that. Let me get into some comments here. We have a good lobby. So that's who, Justin, I think the guy you would bring up for Chris Taylor would be a Miguel Vargas because he can go back and forth between both infield and outfield. I think Vargas could play second, third, or left field. Hey, Craig, good evening. By the way, Craig, great call, great find on the Shohei Ohtani pull heavy thing earlier. I've used that a ton. Obviously, he's gotten past that, and I think he leads the league in extra base hits now. So great call on that. Hey, Roy, good evening, Roy, and good evening, Deuce. Bringing Vesia into a close game isn't optimal. Yeah, Alex Vesia, he's a guy that's kind of a lightning bolt for Dodgers fans. He actually was very, 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 very good. Matter of fact, let me get his numbers up here, and I'll explain just how good Alex Vesia was towards the end of last year. Give me just a second here. Let me get to his game logs. And I know at the beginning of last year, it was a struggle for Alex Vesia. No doubt about that. And it just seems like when he's on the mound, it's not a comfortable feeling. It's like you're nervous. It's nerve-wracking. And I think a lot of that is his mannerisms because he's just kind of a roller coaster emotionally, it seems like, when he's on the mound. But if you look at how he did last year, okay, in July, he posted a 180 ERA. In August, he posted a 279 ERA. In September, he posted a 245 ERA. And then in the playoffs last year, he posted a 450 ERA, which isn't great, but it's also not catastrophic. So actually, Alex Vesia was very, very, very good from July 1st on at the end of last year. So this year so far, Alex Vesia, he has had 6 outings, and he has given up single runs in 3 of them, and his ERA is 4.05. So, yeah, I mean, it's of course, his whip is 1.35, which is not so. That means he's allowing a lot of guys on base. So, yeah, I wouldn't disagree that Alex Vesia has struggled from time to time, and he does make you nervous. I would say, though, to his defense, I think Alex Vesia has been better than what Dodgers fans give him credit for. And also, whenever you're dealing with 162, if the guy's in your 26-man roster, with the way the Dodgers are trying to keep their pitching staff healthy, if he's on your roster, you got to pitch him. I mean, you can't save him to say, well, we don't trust him, so we're not going to bring him in this game, because then come July or August, you're going to have your pen completely worn out. If that's the way you feel about Alex Vesia, if you don't feel like you can bring him in the game, then he can't be on your 26-man roster. So it has to be one or the other. Either he's on your 26-man roster, which means you put him in when you have to have him and when you need him, or if you don't trust him to bring him in when you need him, he's got to go down, and it's got to be somebody else that you might trust. So, yeah, that's my thoughts on Alex Vezina. Roberts pinch hitting for James Altman for Chris Taylor was a bad decision. The platoon thing, I mean, it's computer ball, and I get it. I mean, I understand right versus left, left versus right, and all that. But if you look at James Altman's, and I actually asked him this question when I had a chance to interview him the last time I did interview him. If you look at James Altman and his splits, he wasn't bad against lefties last year. I think he hit something like 260, something like that. Now, he didn't hit for any power, and he even said, hey, it's hard to hit for power when it's left on left because those guys are good and you're just trying to stay on the ball. You're just trying to put a good hit on the ball. You're not trying to really ambush anything. And so, and the thing about it is, my opinion only, James Altman is very feel heavy. So if you're going to take a guy that's feel heavy and then play him, sit him, that's not optimal for a guy like that. I don't think there's any coincidence that he got to play on back-to-back games, and he's 4 for his last 9. At least he was the last time I checked earlier today. 4 for his last 9 and starting to hit the ball better. James Altman is a guy that you have to evaluate in totality. He's extremely talented. I understand the strikeout rate is around 34%. That has to come down. I'm the first one to admit that. I've said all offseason, I hope it comes down to 25%. But the thing about James Altman is he's got to be in there every day because with a guy that's as feel-heavy as he is, but as talented as he is, there's always going to be a certain amount of ups and downs. You know, like Freddie Freeman, he has that sweet stroke. I mean, he's just the most consistent player offensively that maybe I've ever seen. It's just amazing how consistent Freddie Freeman is. James Altman is a good offensive player. He was a 4.4 WAR player last year, which, if that was the free agent market type contract, would demand probably around $35 million. At least that's what Austin would say, and I totally trust Austin in that situation. So he was incredibly valuable last year on a rookie contract, but that's because the Dodgers put him in there every day. And then you look at it in the totality of the 6 months, he was valuable over the 6 months. You can't judge a guy like James Altman in short bursts, good or bad, because there's going to be times on the good side where you go, well, hell, James Altman's the best player in the major leagues. Well, he's going to have the ups and downs, again, because he's feel heavy, and he's going to have way more downs than he is ups if you're putting him in, taking him out, putting him in, taking him out, pinch hitting for him, and not allowing him to feel like he's getting a totality of playing time and a totality of just getting comfortable because, hey, I've got another 480 at-bats. I'm not really worried about it. Let's just get back in the cages and go to work. That's just my opinion on it. In this scenario, you look at Gavin Lux, Chris Taylor, James Altman. Now, Mickey Rojas is doing well. But by and large, Kike Hernandez, by and large, the guys that are in this platoon aren't performing. So the platoon is not working. So if something's not working, hey, man, if you're the only reason you're doing a platoon is because it's supposed to be advantageous. It's supposed to work better than it would if you didn't platoon. So if you're platooning and it's not working, do something else. My opinion is James Altman needs to be in the lineup every day versus right-handers, versus left-handers. And if you want a platoon to get Chris Taylor and Kike Hernandez, their 200, 300 at-bats, whatever it is, your target is for them, do it with somebody else. Not necessarily because James Altman's better than the other person you're platooning, but because I think it's more crucial for him to get every day at-bats. Hey, Deuce says, love Hernandez's approach at the plate. Making contact seems to be a priority. I love contact-type approaches, especially if what I really like, what I used to preach was, hey, the first swing is for you. And then, you know, after you get to two strikes, that two-strike swing is for your team. So I like the I don't mind guys letting it eat for strike one and then a lot of times strike two, but when they get strike two for the strike three swing, I like to see guys just try to put the ball in play, because if you do strike out, nothing's going to happen on that particular. Now, there are strikeout scenarios that are productive, 8 or 9 pitch at-bats. We had a stat called quality at-bats at the high school level. Any at-bat, no matter how it ended, over seven pitches was a quality at-bat. And our goal in a 7-inning game was 15 quality at-bats. In a 9-inning game, it would be somewhere around 20. And if we felt like if we reached 15 quality at-bats versus trying to evaluate a batting average, which is tough because you're failing 70% of the time, versus evaluating power or any of that, let's just evaluate your quality at-bats, because that's something that is more easily attainable, so it's bringing more success into the mind thought of the players. So in a 9-inning game, 7 pitch at-bat, any at-bat that ends up on base, okay, any hard contact, even if it ends up in an out. So hard contact in the major leagues would be 93, 94 or above. Any hard contact, anytime you get on base, no matter how, walk, hit by pitch, any at-bat that is over 7 pitches, that's a quality at-bat. So if we got 15 or above, we won upwards more than 90% of our games. I think if you started keeping quality at-bats for the Dodgers, 7 pitches or more, on base any way you can, hard contact. And I think if you set the number at, say, oh, I'd say 18 or 19, maybe 20, I think you'd find that the Dodgers, when they hit that metric, they will win more than 90% of the time. That's how I would approach offensively from a just an approach perspective. But again, hey, this is an offense that has proven to be just dynamite, the best offense, in my opinion, in baseball. And I think whenever they actually get everybody going, Gavin Lux being included, he got a hit today. It was good to see that. James Altman, when they get the bottom of this order going, it's going to be absolutely scary. Good evening, One-Eyed Dragon. Thank you so much for joining tonight. I really appreciate it. Michael Carrillo, thank you for joining. Miller just needs to put guys away. If he starts nibbling, he isn't going to have success. Completely agree, Michael. Here's why he was nibbling today. So when you don't land your off-speed stuff, of which he was pulling his changeup, his curveball was breaking so much, it was actually breaking into the dirt, and it was doing it so violently that it was a fairly easy take. Now, I know he did get a couple of swings and misses on it. The only couple of curveballs that I saw that he threw for strikes actually were swings and misses on pitches out of the zone. But when you're not landing your secondary off-speed pitches, at that point, guys eliminate them. They're just like they did with Gavin Stone last year, like they did with Ryan Pepiot 2 years ago. So they say, you know what? We're not swinging at his off-speed. We're going to sit fastball. At that point, when a major league hitter is sitting fastball, you have to be so perfect with your placement, because if they're sitting fastball and you don't throw a perfect fastball on, say, the outside corner, maybe low, if you don't locate almost perfectly, that major league hitter is going to do what the Twins did today and hit home runs. And so at that point, if you can't locate your secondary pitches, like Bobby Miller struggled with today, the only pitch he threw in the zone today, at least 50% in zone, was his fastball. That was it. None of his off speeds were close. And so when that's the case, you have to locate your fastball better. Otherwise, you're going to get ambushed. And at that point, then it becomes, I can't tell you how hard it is to have to locate perfectly over and over and over and over. It just reduces all of that margin for error. That's what Bobby Miller was dealing with today. And because of that, honestly, I was very proud of him, because I've seen Bobby Miller many times in the past. I've mentioned this several times. He gets pissed, man. I mean, he does not like failure. Matter of fact, I even asked this of his Double-A manager, Scott Hennessy. Last time I had a chance to talk to Scott, actually in Wichita last June, and it's like, hey, Bobby Miller gets pissed when he throws a ball. When he doesn't throw something perfectly, it pisses him off, right? So he's conquered that, hey, I'm going to be mad about this, whatever, and he's actually started to be able to move past that. So the fact that Bobby Miller couldn't land his off-speed stuff did not let that affect him. understood that he had to be almost perfect with his fastball. That wasn't going to happen at all times. So he's going to get ambushed a time or two. Keep moving on, keep grinding, and find a way to keep your team in the game. That's what he did today. I'm telling you, obviously the execution wasn't great. It was certainly wasn't perfect. So from that aspect, I understand that people are disappointed. Dodgers fans are disappointed. But in many, 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 many ways, today was a good day for Bobby Miller from an emotional perspective of being able to grind mentally past not being, from a command perspective, perfect the way that he likes to be perfect. I thought emotionally, mentally, he handled it well. He put the Dodgers in position to win the game. I have seen him in the past get so frustrated that he's pissed off. The next thing you know, he's given up two or three home runs, and it turns into a five or six spot, and his team's not in the game. He did not do that today. So from that perspective, I'm very proud of him. The execution is going to come. It just is. It's going to be there eventually. It's always going to come and go. Not everybody takes their A stuff every time they go out. That's going to come and go. What you can take with you every time, though, is that mentality that, to me, he showed that I haven't seen all the time in the past. So I think today, although it wasn't a good day for execution for Bobby Miller, I think it was a good day from an approach and perspective for him. Just from what I've seen, and I've seen him quite a bit in the past, that's kind of where I'm at. One-Eyed Dragon says, got to give Albin some runway. Absolutely agree with that. Hey, One-Eyed Dragon also says, I can watch Freddie bat all day long. So Freddie is that gap-to-gap hitter. He's trying to hit doubles. If the ball gets in the air, then it becomes a home run. Freddie Freeman is my kind of hitter. If you can try to if you could say, hey, if you take a kid that's starting T-ball and they look at you and they go, Mom, Dad, what type of hitter should I be? Who should I pattern myself after? Not even talking about swing mechanics or anything of that. Try to be Freddie Freeman, the guy that hits the left center field gap, the guy that hits the right center field gap. Because of that, he lets the ball get deeper. Because of that, he doesn't pull off the ball. He stays on the ball. And because of all that, he gets to see the ball a little bit longer. And because of all that, he's consistent. He's remarkably consistent. So, hey, I'm with you, One-Eyed Dragon. I could watch Freddie Freeman all day long, too. Deuce, hitting for Albin and letting Barnes hit makes zero sense. Yes, Barnes had the platoon advantage, but he's still Austin Barnes. Computer ball, that's the platoon stuff. I'm going to preface it by, I believe in just putting your best hitters out there. I mean, James Albin had been 4 for his last 9. Let him hit. He did okay against lefties last year. So, who else was excited when CT3 pinch hit in the 9th inning? That's coming from Matty Man 5 Dodge. Justin Lamas, should we expect a bullpen game sometime in the future? Yamamoto is currently scheduled to pitch Friday and again Wednesday the 17th on 4 days rest. So here's the problem with bullpen games. I know on the surface they look like they're saving pitching, and they do if everything works perfect. So it's kind of like when you set up a budget and you go, hey, we can pay all of our bills as long as nothing breaks down, right? So when you have a bullpen game and you fire your Ryan Yarbrough and Michael Grove bullets in that bullpen game, now what happens if 2 games later your starting pitcher struggles and can't make it through 2 or 3 innings? You don't have that buffer. So what a bullpen game does is it takes away your buffer for any kind of margin for error for any of your starters in the future. So, yeah, that's why bullpen games, I don't hate them necessarily, but they can't be a regular thing, in my opinion, because you're going to have starters that struggle, that you need to take out in the 3rd inning, and you need to have Ryan Yarbrough and Michael Grove ready to go for those scenarios instead of already firing those bullets in the bullpen game 2 days earlier. Hey, Austin Brubaker is in the house. Hey, yeah, Michael Carrillo says there's lots of ads. I put it on the balance. I don't know exactly what YouTube does with that, but I put it on the balanced setting. Hey, Greg Osterberg, do the Dodgers have a psychologist to talk to if they're having a rough time, like Taylor or Barnes? Yeah, they have plenty of people that they can go and talk to and do those kinds of things. I wouldn't think they need, though, honestly, a psychologist. I just think baseball's hard, and sometimes you go into slumps. Hey, Miller has all the tools he needs except for the one that matters, keeping his cool. I thought he did a good job, though, today, Matty Man 5. I don't disagree with you. I thought he did a better job today than I had seen him in the past do that, and I think that's why he minimized it to 2 and left the game. Although, on short, he went a short distance. He did leave the game with the Dodgers still in it. Can Vessi just one time not give up a home run? Yeah. Everybody's going to want Vessi to pitch for them in the home. Yeah. Austin Brubaker, Loon score at 3 in the 10th. Luis Rodriguez, hey, yeah, I was watching that game. Close game in the end. Loon score 3 in the 10th inning. Luis Rodriguez, Noah Miller, Chris Newell drive-in runs. Lucas Webb to finish off the Lugnuts. Fantastic. Great job, Loons. I know Austin was at that game. Yes, bullpen games burn up your bullpen, no doubt about it. So that means then your starters have to be perfect about for the last next 3 or 4 games after that. We saw that, yes, the Dodgers won their bullpen game, but then a couple games later, I can't remember who it was, but the starter went short, and they really didn't have any bullets to fire, and they ended up losing that game. So, yes, they won the first battle, but they lost the second battle because of it. Yeah, Matty Man 5 is in the house. BC, not crazy about Grove. He had a good day today. They like Michael Grove, and I tell you, his stuff is good, and they're trying to find a role, give him some runway to see if the totality of runway. You got to realize Grove, he had Tommy John his back half of his sophomore season in college, so he had to shut that down. Then didn't pitch his junior year in college, got drafted, then had COVID. So basically for 2.5 years, didn't pitch at all, came back a little bit in 2021. Then that next year got moved up to the major leagues. So in a lot of ways, and then he still hasn't had a consistent role to really get comfortable back into. So Michael Grove has great stuff, still getting comfortable at this level, still trying to find the sequencing that he can execute over and over and over. I thought the slider looked good today. He definitely featured the slider more than any other pitch. I thought that was a good combination with his cutter, and his fastball averaged over 96 miles an hour. Then he's able to flip that big curveball in for a strike every now and then. So he has good stuff. It's just a matter of finding sequences he can execute over and over that don't get ambushed, that he can keep in the zone, and then also find the role that is best for him. Justin Lamas, should we expect it this week, though, or will Yamamoto make his schedule start on Friday and again on 4 days rest on the 17th? One thing I've learned about the Dodgers is, again, they're on pace for 360 transactions. 360. I mean, that's going to be way more than any other club. So, who knows? I mean, heck, they might go out and find two. Again, talk to Jack Murphy. They're the best. They have an entire scouting department that they're called pro scouts. All they do is go look at the other team's players that might get DFA'd, and then whenever somebody gets put on the waiver wire, then they know all about them. They put the report out on them. So, hey, for all we know, the Dodgers might go out and find a guy, another guy like that, and then DFA him like we saw in the Bill Chris Matt. So, honestly, I couldn't even give you a slight prediction as to what the Dodgers are going to do mapping out their future with as far as – now, the one thing we do know, the Dodgers are going to be very, very cautious trying to save the health of their arms. I know Austin mentioned this morning on our show. The one thing, and probably the biggest bugaboo for the Dodgers, has been health for their pitchers. So I really feel like if the Dodgers are fully healthy, especially if they get Buehler back, if they're fully healthy with the pitching staff going into the playoffs, they will be the best team. So the Dodgers are going to map everything they do to be 100% healthy for the playoffs. Everything they do, every decision they make, is going to be made on that premise. So, hey, Tomotley, good evening. Caught Buehler's performance against the Isotopes. He looks real close to me. 93-95, I would agree, close, not quite there. I thought, of course, he retired 14 of the 16 hitters that he faced. with the two Tommy Johns, the question is, Tamatley, my question for you, and I don't know, well, I'd say my question for you, I don't think anybody can answer this question, is 93-94 just what he is now? Or can he get back to being the 96-97 guy that he's been in the past? So I would agree, he did look good in Oklahoma City. Good depth on the curveball, and he's locating the fastball. Location was good, hoping to keep Stone for that long inning roll. Yep. Hey, Deuce says, I like Grove against righties. Yeah, and then last year he actually got better against lefties, Deuce, because he had that cutter. That cutter was a game changer for him, and it really helped him get left-handers out. So, hey, Michael Krawick, D-Mac, singing your praises again, wants to book you on a show soon. You heard it here. All the best, Casey. Hey, Michael, really appreciate you saying that. I love D-Mac. I say it all the time that D-Mac, hands down, is absolutely the best Dodgers content creator out there. This isn't a competition between Dodgers Daily and we love D-Mac. We love Dodgers Nation. His coverage, I can't even come close to it. I try to be as good as I possibly can be on the minor league deal because that's the where Austin and I have the most access. But, man, when it comes to just being a Dodgers fan and knowing everything about the organization that you, the fans, want to know, that he is absolutely the best. He's simply fantastic. So, yeah, I love D-Mac. I enjoy going on his show. I hope he invites me back on because that is a lot of fun. So, hey, super fun and super exciting that the Loons were able to come back and win tonight. Kind of frustrating that the MIBLB app doesn't let you rewind anymore. So if I catch the game late, I can't go back and watch the innings before that until the game is actually archived. So the minor leagues, Oklahoma City last night, they got postponed. They did not play because they got postponed. And then the Great Lakes Loons were not on video. They didn't have video. I don't know what happened there. Hey, we're spoiled with Dodgers YouTube content. No other team is as blessed. No doubt about it. Hey, Philip Gomez, which shortstop can we trade? Good evening, Philip, by the way. Which shortstop can we trade for not named Adamas? Well, I think you're looking at somebody like maybe a Tim Anderson, something like that. But honestly, I don't think it's – I think it's either Adamas or you just stick with Miguel Rojas and Mookie Betts. I mean, I think Mookie Betts is doing fine. Gavin Lux has not made an error at second base. I understand that his on-base average isn't pretty. I understand that his batting average isn't pretty. But again, Gavin Lux has always hit. Okay, Gavin Lux has been, despite what a lot of people, and Gavin Lux has been, for some reason, I don't understand it, he has been a lightning bolt for Dodgers fans. But this is actually what Gavin Lux has been. 2022, he was a 2.7 WAR player. He was a WRC plus of 114, which means he was 14% better than the league average. He was an above-average defender at second base, and the last full season he had, he hit .276 with an on-base percentage of almost .350. So, Gavin Lux, and then the year before that, he hit .242. But the last time Gavin Lux played in the major leagues for a full season, he was a above average, matter of fact, a well above average player. He's coming off of the knee injury. It's early. He had the devastating setback where the Dodgers gave him a grand total of 10 chances in 6 games to prove himself at shortstop. I think a little bit of that has affected him. I think it's just mentally and just, hey, it's hard enough to hit Major League Baseball pitching. It's even harder if you're trying to do it and you haven't played in over a year. So to say, hey, we're going to take however many at-bats he has this year, how many at-bats he has so far in 2024, looking at here, he has 42 plate appearances. So you're going to take a guy who hit .276 the last time he played, had an on-base percentage of .346, and then after 42 plate appearances, you're going to evaluate him as not being good enough to be a guy that needs runway. I'm not in that boat. I never will be. Gavin Lux is going to be the same offensive player, in my opinion. that he always has been. So the shortstop talk at this point, I think it's either Willy Adames or bust. I don't think you go out and just get a shortstop just to say you need a shortstop to move Mookie Betts to second base because Gavin Lux isn't good, because that's absolutely simply 100% totally entirely not true. That is a narrative that is confirmation bias for some Dodgers fans that for some reason don't like Gavin Lux. And I can't figure it out because he's been a good player. And by the way, he's also been a player that has done everything that the organization has asked him to do. And so it's kind of a weird deal, but it is what it is. So there you go. Hey, love the content, sir. Keep it coming. That's from Philip Gomez. Thank you so much. Hey, Roy Estrada, good evening. Yeah, hey, BC says, Doug, Casey, Clint, Jeff. Collaboration would be dope. Yeah, that would be really cool. Really cool. Roy Estrada, Robert's treating Vesia like Jansen, keeps putting Vesia in, knowing three outs and one inning is too much to ask. Put your hand on fire and get burnt. Yeah, that's from Roy. Philip Gomez, love the content. Hey, Austin Brubaker, Webb slams the door on the Lugnuts. Love Lucas Webb. Has that herky-jerky, funky motion. BC, Lux was hitting over 290 before he got hurt and slumped late. Yeah, so there you go. Did he talk about pinch hitting the worst hitters on the team yet? Today, yeah, Taylor and Lux, who they hit when they needed a run. Yeah, the pinch hitting thing. Yeah, got to hit the road, says Justin Lamas. Have a great night. Deuce, Dodgers hyped Lux, and fans were bitter after losing Seager and Trey Turner. Came up at a difficult time and more expected from him. Yeah, Gavin Lux is one of those deals that it's, you know, I mean, it is what it is. He needs runway. Either you give him the runway or you don't. I mean, one or the other. But if you, I mean, it's mind-boggling to me to think that a guy was a really good player and then he tears his ACL and 40-some-odd plate appearances, not at-bats, plate appearances later, Dodgers fans are talking about him not being any good. That's interesting to me. But, hey, that's about all I got for you this evening. We're going to go ahead and get on out of here. I got some things to do on a Wednesday night. So, hey, it's been a great show. It's been a great crowd. I want to thank you for tuning in and say go Dodgers.